It's time. You're listening to the National Edgar Allan Poe Theater on the Air, sponsored in part by Baltimore's own Raven Beer and the Baltimore Office of Promotion in the Arts. This ongoing series brings to your ears the best-known works from America's revered grandfather of horror and suspense. In today's episode, Poe Theater takes on one of Poe's better-known humorous stories, The Spectacles. We'll soon meet a vain young man who changes his name to try to inherit a fortune from a distant relative. He falls in love with a seemingly beautiful woman at the opera, but because he refuses to wear his glasses, he gets mixed up in a case of mistaken identity. And now, Poe Theater on the Air presents The Spectacles. I must say, Nappy, that French wife of yours is quite the chef. The bouillabaisse with the Maryland crab was superb. Nappy, what are you searching for? Why don't you sit and enjoy this outstanding wine with me?
Damn my eyes. I mean that quite literally. Now, where did I put my blasted spectacles?
Madame, dearest, have you seen my spectacles anywhere?
You were wearing them at dinner, Nappy. Have you checked the top of your head?
Hmm? Oh, don't be ridiculous. Oh, for heaven's sake.
That's what you were looking for.
Whatever would I do without you, my dear?
Most likely walk into many walls and proposition multitudes of little old ladies.
Not a chance, my love. You are the only little old lady for me. Yes, these spectacles are what I was looking for.
Did she say proposition multitudes of little old ladies? Whatever does your lovely bride mean?
You know, it is the absolute truth, dear friend, that my wife is the love of my life. Many years ago, it was the fashion to ridicule the idea of love at first sight, but those who think not less than those who feel deeply have always advocated its existence. Yeah, but the wine! Cheers!
Finally! Cheers!
The confession I'm about to make will add another to the innumerable instances of the truth of the love at first sight position. Imagine, I am still a very young man, not yet 22 years of age, sans spectacles.
A bit challenging to imagine, old man, though you do still have a full head of lush silver hair that I will envy. I grant you that.
My name at present is a very common one, Simpson. I say at present, for it is only lately that I have so been called. I adopted the surname in the last year in order to receive a large inheritance left me by a distant male relative, Adolphus Simpson, Esquire.
Really? How large?
In the millions. The bequest was conditioned upon my taking his name. The family, not the Christian name. My Christian name, as you know, is Napoleon Bonaparte. These are my first and middle names. I assumed the name with some reluctance, as I felt a pardonable pride in my true last name, Froissart. While we're on the subject of names, indulge me in a bit of my family history.
If I must.
Here is a chart of my family tree.
A chart? Why?
Don't you just adore genealogy?
Not especially. My personal lineage is somewhat shadowy, shall we say. But do carry on. I am intrigued.
Very good. My father, right here, was a Monsieur Froissart of Paris. His wife, my mother, whom he married at 15, was a Mademoiselle Croissart, here next to him. She was the eldest daughter of Croissart, the banker, just above here, whose wife was only 16 when she married. She was the eldest daughter of Victor Vossart, here, who had married a lady with a similar name, a Mademoiselle Mossart, who was quite a child when married, and her mother, Madame Mossart, right above her, was only 14 when led to the altar.
14?
Early marriages are not unusual in France.
You'll get no argument here.
So, to recap, it's Mossart, Vossart, Croissart, and Froissart, all in the direct line of descent. My own name, though, became Simpson, legally. At one point, I actually hesitated about accepting the legacy.
Well, how long did that hesitation last?
Not very. But you know I have other things working for me besides money. As to personal endowments, you know too that I am by no means deficient. I am well made and possess what 9/10 of the world would call a handsome face.
I suppose you can call me a 10%er.
What's that?
Nothing. Please continue.
Yes, well, I am a reasonable height. I have great hair, as you can see.
Oh, yes.
And my nose is sufficiently good. My eyes are large and luminous, and although, as we know, they are weak to a very inconvenient degree, no defect would be suspected from their appearance. This weakness has always much annoyed me, and I have resorted to every remedy, short of wearing glasses.
You vain ninny.
I cannot deny the label. In my youth, being young and handsome, I naturally disliked the look of glasses, and I refused to wear them. I knew of nothing which so disfigured the countenance of a young person than a pair of spectacles. But I digress. More about me. My temperament is confident, optimistic, rash, ardent, enthusiastic, and that all my life I have been a devoted admirer of women. One night that winter, I entered a box at the Palace Opera Theater with my old academy friend James Talbot.
Ah, good old Talbot.
Yes, and it was on that fateful night that hangs the whole of my story. I really appreciate you inviting me along tonight, Talbot. Nothing like a good opera to chase away the winter blahs.
The young lady that I had invited backed out at the last moment, feeling a bit, quote, under the weather.
Does that happen to you often? Perhaps it's just a case of, quote, I can't take 3 hours with Talbot. Oh, the seats must be good if you were trying to impress a girl.
Indeed. Box 3, front row. Mm. But it's on the other side, and this crowd is not moving. If you hadn't taken so long arranging your hair, now we're going to miss the curtain.
Oh, stop whining, Talbot. We are simply going to have to bully our way in. Ready?
Ready as ever.
Bully.
Ah, yes, here we are.
See, Talbot, just in time.
Shh.
I was about to turn my eyes to the prima donna when they were arrested and riveted by a figure in one of the private boxes. Oh, if I live 1,000 years, I can never forget the intense emotion with which I regarded this figure. It was the most exquisite beauty I had ever beheld. The magic of a lovely female form was always a power which I could never resist, but here was grace personified, the living embodiment of my wildest and most enthusiastic visions.
I remember that about you. You always had a deep appreciation for the fairer sex.
Still do, I must confess, though I have long held off on chasing every skirt I see. That was the nappy you knew at the academy. Now, back to my story. Her face turned to the stage. I could not see it at all, but I gazed at this queenly apparition for at least half an hour, as if I had suddenly been turned to stone. I felt the full force and truth of all that has been said or sung concerning love at first sight, and I had yet to see her face.
Well, she must have had an extraordinary figure, then.
Oh, indeed she did. Mm. There was a brouhaha in the audience, and she turned her head my way. Ah, her profile was exquisite. Its beauty exceeded my expectations, and yet there was a Madonna-like and matronly air to her face. But there was something else, something mysterious, which slightly disturbed me, even while it greatly heightened my interest. If only she were alone, I'd have gone to her box and, well, lucky for us both, she had companions.
You sly dog.
One seemed to be a gentleman, and the other, another strikingly beautiful woman, a bit younger than herself.
Talbot, let me have your opera glass.
An opera glass? What do you suppose I would be doing with an opera glass?
Talbot, just listen to me, will you? Do you see the stage box? There! No, the next.
Yes.
Have you ever seen as lovely a woman?
Ah, she is very beautiful, no doubt.
I wonder who she could be.
You don't know. Only nobodies don't know. She is the celebrated Madame Lalande, the beauty of the day, the talk of the town. Immensely wealthy, a widow, and a great match. Just arrived from Paris.
Do you know her?
Yes, I have that honor.
Will you introduce me?
Assuredly, with the greatest pleasure. When shall it be?
Tomorrow, at 1, I shall call upon you at home.
Very good. And now, do hold your tongue, if you can.
Throughout the opera, I kept my eyes riveted on Madame Lalande, and was finally rewarded with a full frontal view of her lovely face. Oh, Ed, there was still that unintelligible something that disturbed me, a certain air of gravity, sadness, or weariness, which took something from the youth and freshness of her countenance. It was
undefinable.
Yes.
Elusive.
Yes. Mm. After a while, it seemed she had become aware of the intensity of my gaze. I was absolutely fascinated and could not look away. She turned aside, and after a few minutes, as if urged by curiosity to see if I was still looking, she encountered my burning gaze. She dropped her eyes and blushed.
then produced a pair of eyeglasses and spent nearly 5 minutes giving me an undeniable once-over. At least twice.
What a bold response from a young woman.
Ooh, a fascinating woman. She then turned to speak to the gentleman next to her. They were facing my way, and I thought, well, they must be speaking of me. Now they seem to be done. She's watching the... Oh, no, she's not. She's getting out her glasses again. Once again, she's staring me down. Once again, I am thrown into a perfect fever of excitement, an absolute delirium of love.
Yes, that's called lust, my good man.
Call it what you will, Poe. Throwing caution to the wind, I stood and bowed deeply to Madame Lalanne. She blushed, averted her eyes, and addressed the gentleman at her side. What was I thinking? Flirting openly like that could get a man shot. I imagine the gentleman at Madame Lalanne's side approaching me after the concert.
Swine! Why, how dare you insult the house of Lalanne by flirting shamelessly with a young widow still in mourning? Take that!
Oh! Hey! Oh, my apologies, sir, but my intention was not to insult. I just find the young widow very fetching.
Fetching? Fetching? Why... That is hardly an appropriate description of mine sister. Sir, you are no gentleman. I challenge you to a duel at sunrise tomorrow.
Can we possibly push it to 10? I'm not much of a morning person.
Well, you may not be a morning person, but you should prepare yourself to be mourned, Putz.
What actually happened was, Madame gave the gentleman a program to distract him while she turned to me, flashed me her pearly whites, and fervently nodded in my direction. I grew mad with excessive happiness. My first love, love supreme, love at first sight that was appreciated and returned.
Returned?
Yes, returned. She loved me with an enthusiasm as blind, uncompromising, uncalculating, abandoned, and utterly unbounded as my own. A delicious fancies and reflections were now interrupted by the falling of the drop curtain.
Brava! Brava! The diva was divine, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely divine, yes. Damn, she's leaving. Thank you so much for the ticket, Talbot. Now, sadly, I hate to divine diva and run, but I have to see a man about a horse.
Hey, where the hell are you going? You agreed to reimburse me for the ticket!
I have to run. Bully, excuse me. Oh, bully, pardon him. Oh, sorry. Stuck. It worked with Talbot. Damn. I will be unable to reach her now. Ah, well. I'd best resign myself to the reality that I shall not be spending the rest of the evening with my love. But I will be getting a formal introduction via Talbot tomorrow at 1. When we meet, I shall profess my undying love.
Out, Stubbs? Well, what do you mean out?
I mean out as in not here, absent from the premises. Out.
Out?
Well, let me tell you, my fine woman, that this is thoroughly impossible. Mr. Talbot cannot be out. He promised me an introduction at 1 o'clock. I waited all night. No sleep. The molasses movement of time has driven me mad. Stubbs, he cannot be out.
Sorry for your troubles, but he left after breakfast and told me he won't be back for a week.
A week? Liar!
I'm sorry, what did you call me?
You're a liar! Talbot must be here somewhere. Perhaps you're confusing him with another resident.
If you don't leave here now, everyone will be confused in your face for a well-pounded steak.
Ugh. What a charming woman. Wonderful, Talbot. I'm sure that you forgot the moment we agreed to meet. You and your entire family can rot in hell for all I care. Oh, I need a drink. I'll make my way to the establishment where Talbot and I meet up with our old academy chums on a fairly regular basis. Perhaps he or some of the others will be there. Edgar Allan Poe! Oh, thank heavens for academy friends. You're not going to believe what Talbot has done.
Wait, don't tell me. Napoleon Bonaparte Froissart. What are you drinking?
Brandy.
Barkeep, large snifter of your best brandy for my friend here. Care for a snort of the enhancer?
No. Thank you, not my sort of thing.
Yeah, don't knock it till you've tried it. Now, tell me all about that wretch Talbot.
Ugh, much to my amazement, the loser was acquainted with the most divine creature I've ever laid eyes on.
He promised me an introduction today, but when I went by his residence at the appointed time, his landlady told me that he had left town for a week.
Do tell. And who is this divine creature you speak of?
Madame Lalande, the widow from France. By any chance, do you know her?
Ah, yes. Her beauty is legendary.
You know her? Can you introduce me today, right now?
Down, boy, down. I don't know her. I just know of her. From what I understand, she's only been in town for a few weeks. You'll just have to wait for Talbot to return. Oh, look out the window as I live and breathe. There she is. Surprisingly beautiful. An angel on earth.
Ah, it's the enchanting vision of the opera. And the other lady who has also been in her theater box.
Her companion also wears remarkably well. Still quite a brilliant air, but art will do wonders. Looks better than she did in Paris 5 years ago. Beautiful woman still, don't you think, Froissart? Simpson, I mean.
Still? And why shouldn't she be? And don't call me Simpson.
Ah, Madame Lalande saw me! Oh, she just blessed me with the most angelic smile.
Well, good for you, whatever the hell your name is.
Do you remember that day?
Vaguely.
I checked in with Talbot's footman, Stubbs, every day for a fortnight, just to hear, "Not come home yet." I also kept myself occupied at every reputable place of public amusement. And then, one night, just as I felt all hope was lost, I saw her again at the very same theater where we first laid eyes on each other.
That must have been a joyous moment.
Oh, I was in a condition little short of madness. Madame Lalande was a Parisian. Might she not suddenly leave for the city? Return to gay Paris before Talbot returned from wherever the hell he was, and thus lost to me forever? Oh, that terrible thought was too much to bear. Since my future happiness was at issue, I resolved to act with a manly decision. I'm a bit ashamed to say, but after the play ended, I followed the lady to her residence and noted the address. The next morning, I sent her a letter.
Dear Madame Lalande, I can vividly recall our first meeting at an opera performance of Norma by Bellini. It was at that meeting, if we can call it that, where there were many glances between us. Please pardon my boldness, but I feel assured of your love, as much as you may feel assured of mine, for I am intensely devoted to you. My friend Talbot, who claims to know you, offered to introduce us the very next day, but then promptly disappeared. Having recently inherited an embarrassingly huge sum of money from an ancient relative I never met, I assure you that while I may be a very young man, I am a young man of means. I offer you my hand and my heart forevermore. All my love, Napoleon Bonaparte Simpson ni Froissart. After what felt like a century, she actually replied.
Monsieur Simpson will pardon moi for not compose the beautiful tongue of his country so well as I might. It is only the late that I am arrived and not yet have the opportunity for to study the language. With this apology for the manner, I will now say, alas, Monsieur Simpson, I've guessed but too true. Need I say the more? Or am I not ready to speak too much? Eugène Lalande.
Oh, I shall kiss this note a million times, and commit no doubt on its account a thousand other extravagances. Still no Talbot. I must write to him. Dear Talbot, where have you gone? When shall you return? You promised me an introduction to Madame Lalande, with whom I have fallen deeply in love. I fear that she may return to Paris before I get the opportunity to meet her. Please advise. Still your friend, but barely, Napoleon Bonaparte Froissart Simpson. It seemed for ages before I received an unsatisfactory reply.
Dear Nappy, sorry, but I have been detained by urgent business. I shall return soon. Patience. In the meantime, moderate your transports, read soothing books, drink nothing stronger than hock, and bring the consolations of philosophy to your aid. Your friend, Talbot.
My friend the fool. Why did he not enclose a letter of presentation? I must write again. Dear Talbot, why did you not include a letter of presentation? Yeah, okay, that should suffice. Yeah. Regards, Nappy. Shortly thereafter, I received another reply, hastily scrawled in pencil.
Mr. Talbot left yesterday for parts unknown. I do not know where or when he will be back, so thought best to return your letter, knowing how you are always, more or less, in a hurry. Yours sincerely, Mrs. Stubbs.
Stubbs had joined Talbot in the country. They could both rot in hell as far as I was concerned. It was time for Plan B. Since the affair of the letter, I, once again, am ashamed to say, started watching her house and learned that at twilight it was her custom to promenade in the public square in front of it. One sweet midsummer evening, I saw an opportunity and took it.
Why, you dirty dog!
Madame Lalande! Oh, what a pleasant surprise running into you here. I just love the gray gloom of a sweet midsummer eve. You look ravishing as ever.
Excusez-moi, monsieur.
Vous avez le ravissant comme jamais.
Monsieur Napoleon, merci. Thank you. My English is not very good.
Neither is my French, but who needs talk when one has love? Marry me, Eugenie. Marry me now. Today I can't bear another minute without being your husband.
My dear Monsieur Napoleon Bonaparte, Froissart, Simpson.
Please, just call me Nappy.
D'accord, Nappy. I must ask for your patience. You have been asking to make, acquaintance with me, oui? Does this not mean we do not have acquaintance?
But we do know each other, having examined each other's visage at length at the opera.
But there has been so little time since then. To be married so very quick would be improper, inconvenant, outre.
That much I understand. So I suppose running away with me is out of the question.
Mon Dieu, Nappy, you are rash and imprudent. You know nothing about me, my prospects, connections, standing in society. Oh, please, reconsider your proposal, Nappy. Nappy. I like this name. It suits you. What you are feeling is infatuation, a fantasy of the imagination.
No, my darling Eugenie, I am devoted to you. You're the most beautiful creature I have ever laid eyes on. I adore you with all the passion I have to give. But the course of true love never runs smooth, so why tempt fate? Marry me, my love, marry me now.
Marry now? Very well. However, there is an obstacle that you have not considered.
Oh, really? And what would that be?
Are you aware of the age discrepancy between us, Nappy? A husband must be a few, even 15 or 20 years older than the wife. That is acceptable in polite society, no? When the wife is older than the husband, this causes a life of misery.
Oh. My sweetest Eugenie, what are you talking about? You may well be a few years older, but the customs of the world are so bougie?
Bourgeois?
Oui, bourgeois. What difference does a few years make to those who love as we do? I am 22, almost 23, and you, my dearest, can be no more you dropped something, my love, here.
Keep it. It is a miniature portrait of moi. And on the back of the locket, you may discover the information you seek. It is now growing dark, so you may examine it at your leisure in the morning. Now, please, escort me home, Nappy. Mes amis are having a musical soiree with some good singing. We will tell everyone that you are an old acquaintance of mine.
It's so dark in here. No lamps, no sconces.
Mes amis try to keep it cool in the heat of midsummer.
No! Oh, bother, I just walked into something.
I believe this is a chaise. Why don't we sit?
Oh, a splendid idea. Oh, you were correct. The singers are really good.
Oh. Bravo! Oh, a Pierre! Stephanie! Come, they are calling for Madame Lalande. Oh, you will excuse me, my dear, but my public awaits. Why don't you wait here for me to avoid arousing suspicion? You may not be able to see me, but you will be able to hear me sing.
Yes, of course, my love. And she's gone. Damn, just when I was ready to make my move. Oh, her tones were absolutely miraculous, better than the diva we saw. Oh. Oh, good Lord, Eugenie, what a delightful performance.
Merci, Nappy. But now you must tell me all about yourself. What was it like for you at the university?
Well, I was a bit of a bad boy, I must confess.
Oh, la la! Tell me more.
I would sometimes miss lectures in favor of spending the afternoon at the inn drinking ale with some of my ne'er-do-well school chums.
Really? You would all miss the lectures just to drink ale? It should have been champagne.
Speaking of which, I grabbed a couple of flutes for us while you sang. Here you are. To us.
To us. So, tell me more. This is fascinating. What else did you do, you bad boy?
I was a prolific gambler. I won, and then I lost even more.
So bad. And what about the girls? You are quite handsome.
No, Eugenie, you inflame my heart. I've had my fair share of dalliances, but I am certainly not one to kiss and tell.
Ah, très galant. Did all of that carousing have a negative effect on your health?
No, worry not, my love. My only infirmities are chronic rheumatism and hereditary gout.
You get that from your great-grandfather.
Excuse me, what was that?
Oh, nothing. Any other maladies I should know about as if future Madame Simpson?
Oh, I can hardly bear it a moment longer not being married to you, my love, my life. I must come clean and tell you that I am nearly blind. In order to see clearly, I must wear spectacles.
Is that so? Huh? Nobody would know if you did not say. But we all need a little bit of help for the reading, n'est-ce pas? Have you regarded mon cheri ami of this little ocular assistant hanging below my neck?
Yes, they are very impressive. I mean it! It is very impressive. The pince-nez, those armless spectacles, of course, very impressive.
Eh bien, mon ami, you have demanded my hand upon the morrow. If I give in to your demands, and I may add to the pleadings of my own bosom, would I not be entitled to demand of you a very small favor in return?
Name it. Name it, my beloved, my Eugenie, my own. Name it. It is already agreed to before you even name it.
For the sake of Eugenie, whom you love, this weakness of what you confess is so unbecoming, so inconsistent with the candor of your usual character. You really need to get over this. For my sake, please, start wearing these as spectacles, not just as an eyeglass hanging from your coat pocket, but as spectacles permanently in place on the bridge of your fine Roman nose.
But...
Hush! You have already consented to wear them for my sake.
Done. I sacrifice every feeling for your sake. For tonight I will wear them as an eyeglass upon my heart. But in the morning, when we are husband and wife, I will place them on my nose and wear them forever in the decidedly less romantic and fashionable but more practical form which you desire. And now that that is settled, we must plan our elopement, my love. First, we need to procure a carriage.
Monsieur Talbot, our mutual ami, is back in town. Perhaps he can help.
Talbot is back in town? Why did he not contact me? Bugger! A brilliant idea, my love. I shall go to him now.
Perhaps he can also help us find an all-night clergyman. Monsieur Talbot seems to know everyone in this town. Be here with the carriage at 2 a.m. when the soiree breaks up. The confusion will allow me to slip away unnoticed. Then we can be married, drop Monsieur Talbot at home, and go on a short tour to the eastern shore for our honeymoon.
Oh, how tongues will wag. Okay, I am on my way to Talbot's, love of my life, my future wife. I shall see you at 2 a.m. Oh, how I long to kiss those lips. If there weren't so many people here, I would. Until I see you again, my love. I took my leave of her, and on my way to Talbot's, I just couldn't resist the urge to step into a hotel to inspect the locket she had given me, with the miniature image of my love using the eyeglass that she had only just provided.
And what knowledge did that miniature yield?
How surpassingly
beautiful she was. Those large, luminous eyes, the proud Grecian nose, those dark, luxuriant curls. Oh, oh, my beloved. On the back, I found the information I sought. Eugenie Lalanne, 27 years, 7 months. A 5-year age difference. A very small gulf. Certainly when one is drowning in a sea of love.
I suppose, though I seem to prefer younger women myself.
I've heard that about you, Poe. In any event, I rushed off and arrived at Talbot's.
Hello, Stubbs. You are back from the country, and so I assume is your employer.
Yes, sir, you assume correctly.
I can take over from here, Stubbs. Napoleon, it has been a while.
It certainly has. Do you remember before you left for parts unknown, you had promised to introduce me to the French widow, Madame Lalande?
Oh, yes, of course. I am so sorry I dropped the ball on that, but I had urgent business in the country.
Well, I did finally meet her, with absolutely zero help from you. The good news is, we are in love, and we want to be married before the morning's light.
Congratulations! That's wonderful news! Perhaps she will make an honest man of you yet.
Oh, she already has. I was wondering if you could help us by procuring a carriage and a clergyman to our elopement, if you would stand up for us?
Of course! The carriage is readily available, and I know the perfect officiant for the job. In fact, he is Madame's spiritual advisor, Le Reverend Père Le Rabin. He was the gent in the box with Madame Eugenie that night at the opera.
That man is not her brother?
No, of course not. Whatever made you think that to be true?
I suppose it was a daydream, or perhaps I could call it a daymare, in which he proclaimed to be Madame's brother and challenged me to a duel. So he is not a brother, but a father. Well, that will be convenient. We can scoop him up when we pick up my love. I noticed him at the soiree earlier.
Excellent. Stubbs!
Sir?
Please call for a carriage, the finest you can find. It is going to be the transport to my old friend's wedding.
Well, congratulations to you, sir.
Thank you, Mrs. Stubbs. I regret the words we had. And I apologize for cursing you and your family to eternal damnation. But, as you can see, I'm just a fool in love.
You can say that again.
I don't see her anywhere, Talbot. What if she changed her mind? I shall lose mine.
Stop being so dramatic, Nappy. Stay here. I'll sneak in and collect her and the pair.
Oh, bless you, Talbot. Whatever would I do without you? I must apologize for cursing you and your family to eternal damnation, but...
Yes, yes, fool in love, I know.
This is taking forever. Oh, oh, thank God, Eugenie. You are here. You are actually here. And more beautiful than ever.
Did you doubt me, monsieur?
He did.
Shut up, Talbot. Perhaps for a moment when I did not see you waiting for me, my love. Can you ever forgive me?
But of course, naturellement. I apologize for making you wait, but I had to arrange for my trousseau. Nappy, this is my spiritual advisor, Père Le Rabin. He has agreed to perform the marriage ceremony.
Oh, thank you, Father. Your name is very interesting. Did you know that in English it means Father Rabbi?
I knew this. You think I didn't know this? My father was a rabbi, but developed a taste for Maryland crab, and so he converted. But no worries. I converted too, and this ceremony is 100% legal. This marriage will be rock solid, certified kosher, divorce proof even.
Marvelous. Well, shall we get on with it then?
Driver, take us away from here for the ceremony, somewhere under the stars. Now, once we have performed the ceremony, we can have the driver deliver Père Le Rabin and myself to my place, and you two lovebirds can be on your way. I've instructed the driver to stop for some rest and breakfast in Clarksville before you proceed to your honeymoon.
Wonderful!
This seems like a good spot.
No, it's pitch dark out there.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to join this man and this woman in holy matrimony. Now, if any here have any objections, let them speak now or forever hold their peace. No objections? Nobody? What, anybody? Really?
No, no objections.
Very well, then. Do you, Eugenie Leland, swear to love, honor, cherish, and obey Napoleon Simpson through sickness and in health until death do you part?
Oui.
Say, I do.
I do.
Do you, Napoleon Bonaparte Froissart Simpson, swear to love, honor, and cherish Eugenie?
You forgot to obey.
Oh, that is only included in the bride's vows.
I shall speak with the Pope about this.
Now, where was I? Oh, yes. Do you, Napoleon Bonaparte Froissart Simpson, swear to love, honor, and cherish Eugenie Leland through sickness and in health until death do you part?
I do.
Then by the powers vested in me by the state of Maryland, I now pronounce you man and wife, Mazel Tov.
Congratulations, you two lovebirds. Come, Birchstein and I will return to my place and you can be on your way.
Oh, I can't thank you enough, Talbot, for all you've done.
Oui, Monsieur Talbot. Neither can I.
Oh, it has been my absolute delight. Good night. Best of luck.
Bless you, mine children. Safe travels.
Thank you.
Alone at last, my darling Eugenie. Oh, poor darling. Oh, a deep soulful kiss would have been lovely, but my love for her is so great that I think my heart might burst from the adorableness of it, and I shall leave her to her dream within the dream. Eugenie, my love, we have arrived at the Clarksville Inn. Did you enjoy your nap?
You startled me.
Oh, so sorry, my love. Let's go and have some breakfast.
Welcome to the Clarksville Inn. Pub room or public parlor?
We are newlyweds.
Is that right? Well, congratulations. And good for you, Mrs. Private parlor it is.
This is lovely.
Only the best for my girl.
What can I get for you?
2 eggs Benedict with fried potatoes. And your best champagne.
Very good, sir.
Oh, look, my dear, the warm shades of the sun are beginning to rise. You know, I've never seen you in the daylight.
And now, mon cher ami, since we are now as one, I have kept my end of the bargain, oui? Now it is your turn to bestow a favor, oui? Ah, let me see. Let me remember. You said... Done. I sacrifice every feeling for your sake. For tonight, I will wear them as an eyeglass upon my heart. But in the morning, when we are husband and wife, I will place them on my nose and wear them forever in the decidedly less romantic and fashionable, but more practical form which you desire. These were the exact words, my beloved husband, no?
They were. That's remarkable. What a memory you have. Oh, my beautiful Eugenie, of course I will keep my promise. Here we go, right on the bridge of my nose, a minor adjustment. See, they are rather becoming, are they not? Oh, goodness gracious! My goodness gracious me! What is wrong with these glasses? Let me give them a wipe with my hanky. Oh, Eugenie? Can I believe my eyes? Is that rouge? Are those wrinkles? Oh, Jupiter and every one of the gods and goddesses, little and big, what has become of your teeth? What is wrong with these glasses?
Well, monsieur, and what then? What the matter now? Is it the dance of the Saint Vitus that you have? If you not like moi, why you buy the pig in the poke?
You wretch! You villainous old hag!
Hag? Old? Not so very old. Not one single day more than 82.
What? 82?
8,200,000 baboons! The miniature said 27 years and 7 months!
To be sure, that is so. Very true, but the portrait has been taken 55 years ago when I married my second husband, Monsieur Lalonde.
Oh my God.
I had that portrait taken for my daughter by my first husband, Monsieur Moissart.
Moissart?
Oui, Moissart. What you know about their Moissart?
Nothing, you old fright. I know nothing about him at all, only that I had an ancestor of that name once upon a time.
Tis a very good name. And so is Moissart. That is a very good name, too. My daughter, Mademoiselle Moissart, she married Monsieur Moissart. Is very respectable name.
Moissart? Then Moissart? Why, what is it that you mean?
What I mean... Is your hearing impaired as well? Shall we consult the chart?
The chart?
I mean Moissart and Voissart. And for the matter of that, I mean Croissart and Froissart too.
Oh my God.
My daughter's daughter, Mademoiselle Voissart, she married Monsieur Croissart. And then again, my daughter's granddaughter, Mademoiselle Croissart, she married one Monsieur Froissart. And I suppose you say that is not one very respectable name.
I feel faint. Froissart? Why, surely you don't say Moissart and Voissart and Croissart and Froissart?
Oh, yes. Moissart and Croissart and Croissart and Froissart. But Monsieur Froissart, he was one very big, what you call, fool. He was one very big dunce, like you. He left La Belle France for this stupid America. When he get here, he have one very, very stupid son, so I hear. So I have not yet had the pleasure to meet with him. Neither me nor my companion, Madame Stephanie Lalonde. His name is Napoleon Bonaparte Froissart. And I suppose you say that too is not one very respectable name. Take note. The hourglass figure is fake. It's all a costume. Say bye-bye to the bustle.
Oh, good Lord. Oh, I thought at least some of those hips and derriere were really yours. What are you doing? Where are your teeth? Don't shake your fist at me, you old fraudster.
I am a fraudster? Moi? I have never been so insulted. I have never been so outraged! I have never... What is this fraudster?
A fraudster is someone who tricks another, usually for their money.
How dare you call me a fraudster! You are the fraudster! Ah!
Oh, your long, luxuriant black curls on the floor!
A wig?
Oh, Moissart and Voissart, Croissart and Froissart, Moissart and Voissart and Croissart and Napoleon Bonaparte Froissart! You old serpent, that's me! Do you hear? That's me! Just look at your damn chart! I am Napoleon Bonaparte Froissart! And I just married my great-great-grandmother!
Oh, only part of that statement is true. I am indeed your great-grandmare, but we are not really married. You may breathe easy, nappy. You see, I am still happy of you. I shall reserve calling you Napoleon Bonaparte for when you misbehave.
What do you mean we're not married? Are you suffering from dementia? Do you not remember the ceremony with Père Larabanne?
Ah, yes. I remember it well. How could I forget my third marriage? Now listen carefully, Napoleon Bonaparte. I decided to trick you and teach you a lesson about vanity.
You knew you were my great-great-grandmother and you led me on.
I did. I saw a lot of good in you, but that terrible vanity. As you probably know, I am immensely wealthy, having been left for the second time a widow with no children. I thought you might be a proper heir, and so here I am in the United States with a young distant relative as my companion, the widowed Madame Stephanie Lalonde. I'd hoped to introduce you when I learned that you were at the opera that night.
You knew who I was from the very beginning and still you led me on? What sort of ancestor are you?
When I first noticed you staring at me and I looked through my eyeglass, I noticed a family resemblance to myself. I asked the companions that our mutual ami Talbot had provided for me if he knew who you were. He did, because Talbot had once pointed you out to him.
But your companion that night was your spiritual advisor, Père Le Raban, the very villain who married us, knowing that I was your great-great-grandson.
Napoleon Bonaparte. Either you are a very stupid boy, or you are not listening. Which is it?
Not listening?
Perhaps. My companion that night was Birchstein, a friend of Talbot's who was gracious enough to accompany me since Talbot already had a companion. First his lady friend, and then you. Monsieur Birchstein told me who you were, and that was why I was looking so hard on you.
Oh, I acted like such an idiot.
You may have, but I thought your interest was a result of you knowing who I was, your great-grandmère.
I had no idea. Due to my extreme vanity, I refused to wear spectacles outside of my home. When I was struck by your still lovely countenance, great-grandmare.
Oh, my, you are laying it on sick.
Not really. My feelings were immediate and sincere, and when I asked Talbot who you were, he must have thought I meant your young relative, Stephanie Lalonde.
That is exactly what he thought. I know, because I met him in the streets the next morning. We had met in Paris 5 years ago. We spoke of the opera, and Talbot told me about your poor vision and how it has become a joke. How you try to pretend you can see without your spectacles.
Is that right? Have I become a joke for my poor vision?
Nah, not for your poor vision, but because you insist upon denying the one thing that can help you.
Spectacles.
Oui, spectacles. I had to teach you a lesson about the dangers of vanity. You flirted with your great-grandmère, not even knowing who she was, before the patrons of the theater, you silly fool.
Oh, I am so sorry that I embarrassed you, great-grandmère.
The embarrassment is all yours. I plotted with Talbot to stay out of your way to avoid the introduction.
I was livid when I heard that Talbot would be away. A mutual friend, Poe, whom I had met up with, must have thought I was referring to the young relative of husband number two. It explains why he said her companion has held up well.
We had not seen each other during the daylight, but I offered you my eyeglasses at the soiree.
Silly me. I could have discovered your age before I made a fool of myself. Oh, and I suppose when they were calling for Madame Lalonde to sing the aria, it was Madame Stephanie who sang. When the two of you left me alone in the other room, I assumed it was you who was singing, great-grandmère.
I was hoping you would. Here are your spectacles. Come, sit. These glasses I gave to you are not even mine. I had the special pair made to suit you better.
I should put them on before I do anything else that is ridiculous. I thought it odd before that they suited me to a T. Let me gaze upon your beauty. Oh, sorry. Oh, my God. Sorry, knee-jerk reaction. But how is it that we're not married?
It is a good thing that you are pretty and sweet, because you are not terribly bright. I already told you that the man who performed our wedding ceremony was the ami, friend of Talbot's, Birchstein. Since Birchstein is not really a member of the clergy, our so-called marriage never really happened.
Oh, thank the gods. Who is that? Where are you? Outside this window? Talbot, you bastard, I'd know your laugh anywhere. Birchstein, show yourselves...
The cat is out of the bag. You thought that the coachman dropped off Birchstein and myself.
But the opposite was true. We dropped him off.
We wouldn't have missed this spectacle for $1 million.
Not in a million years.
Speaking of spectacles, you shall never see me again without mine henceforth. I am mortified by my actions due to my idiotic vanity. Can you ever forgive me, great-grandmare?
I already have, Nappy. Never had I had more fun teaching someone a lesson. If you will excuse, I will be right back.
Talbot, I can't believe that you betrayed me like that.
Oh, why not? How many times have you gone to the men's lounge at an inn, never to return, leaving me stuck with the full bill? Or that time at school where you put a goat in my room?
He really did that. Oh, you have to admit. That is funny.
It really was.
I did not think so.
Monsieur Napoleon Bonaparte Froissart Simpson, I would like you to meet the niece of my second husband, Madame Stephanie Lalande.
Oh, I have seen you a few times, though we have never spoken. Vous avez l'air ravissante comme jamais.
That sounds familiar.
Merci.
And so it seems our story has a happy ending, huh?
Yes, a very, very happy ending. So, Poe, what do you think? Is this bizarre story of how I met my wife Stephanie twisted enough for your collection?
I think it might just fill the bill. Oh, and speaking of bill, could I possibly get a refill on this brandy?
Oh, of course. Where are my manners? Cheers! Yes?
Great grandmère is headed to her boudoir for the night. She wanted to say goodnight to our guests.
Madame Simpson, Madame Lalande, thank you again from the bottom of my heart for the delicious French cuisine and the charming company.
The pleasure was all ours, Monsieur Poe. You must come and visit again before I return to Paris. I visit once a year for 1 month only. I would hate to wear out my welcome.
We never tire of your presence, great-grandmère.
You're laying it on sick as usual, Nappy. I've told you, you shall receive Monsieur Simpson's full fortune when I die. Monsieur Poe, I do hope to see you again before I go.
I would like that. In fact, Nappy just told me the fantastic story of how he met Madame Simpson, and I'm considering serializing it for one of the periodicals I work with. Of course, the names and all will be altered to protect the innocent.
And not so innocent, perhaps, mon ami.
Why, Madame Lalande, are you flirting with me? But seriously, I'd love to get the story from your perspective.
But seriously, I am flirting with you. And I would enjoy the opportunity to tell my side of things. It is quite amusing. Bonne nuit!
Bonne nuit, madame. Bonne nuit, Madame Stephanie.
Don't be such a stranger, Ed. Good night.
Good Lord. Do either of them ever age? Stephanie still looks like a girl, and the old lady looks just as I remember her the day she drove by in the carriage. But she must be at least 100 years old.
102, to be exact. I'm starting to believe that she will outlive me.
And what of your inheritance? What will you do about that?
It no longer matters. I had some money left to me by my father, and I invested it wisely once I settled down with my bride. Not to mention the fact that Stephanie inherited a huge fortune when her first husband passed. Since then, I have kept my eyes wide open and my spectacles planted firmly on the bridge of my nose.
Do you ever remove them?
In my bedroom only. And I swear, as God is my witness, that I shall never be met by anyone without spectacles.
You've been listening to the National Edgar Allan Poe Theater on the Air and our production of The Spectacles, recorded live at the Enoch Pratt Free Library in Baltimore, Maryland. The Spectacles was adapted for radio by Jade Green and directed by Alex Zavistovich, with the voices of Adam R. Adkins, Bree Kelly, Jade Green, Sarabella Joyce, John Sadowski, and Alex Zavistovich. Original music, sound design, and production by James D. Watson. Poe Theater on the Air theme by Ty Ford. The National Edgar Allan Poe Theater on the Air is sponsored in part by Baltimore's own Raven Beer, purveyors of Poe-inspired craft beer, and by the Baltimore Office of Promotion and the Arts, Creative Baltimore Fund. The Spectacles was made possible by the Enoch Pratt Free Library, including special assistance from Adult Services Coordinator Emily Levine and recording engineers Sean Delaney, Beatrice Shumway, and Bernard Smith. Special thanks to Siobhan Beckett, Laura Jones, and the Poe Theater Board of Directors. More information on the National Edgar Allan Poe Theater on the Air can be found at poetheater.org. Until next time, this is Alex Zavistovich, reminding you that all that we see or seem is but a dream within a dream.